Hello and welcome to another episode of What Makes You Click. I'm your host, Kelvin Bullock. And on today's episode, I'm featuring a guest who is an editorial and commercial photographer with some pretty amazing clients. But more than just a photographer and a director, I consider this individual to be an overcomer and a survivor. And as you listen to her story, you will understand why I say that. So without further ado, let's take a listen to hear what makes Stephanie Diani click. Right. Stephanie, hey, I appreciate you for hopping on this call and taking the time to chat with me. I'm very excited to get into what makes you click.
Thanks for having me. I'm honored that you asked.
Of course, of course. And I actually became aware of your work probably about a month or so ago. I think you might have popped up in my Explore page, or maybe another page that I follow had shared some of your work. And the image that they had shared was, it was of some celebrity. I don't remember who it was, but I just remember looking at the color and the light and the, just the energy of the image. And it made me just stop for a moment from scrolling and pay attention. And anytime an image does that for me, I'm like, okay, let me see who took this photo. And so then, you know, I went down the rabbit hole of clicking on your work and then going to your website. And it's clear to me that you have a point of view, and it's clear that you know how to communicate that point of view. Like I said, the color, the lighting, just the way that you capture the subject that's in front of your camera. And it's clear that you work with quite a few celebrities, but I think the work that stood out the most to me was something that you did, which was very creative. And I'm jumping ahead, but I want to go ahead and mention it now. It was a series of faces where you had listed in the description that you went on Craigslist and you put out a casting call basically for people who wanted to have their image taken or felt that they had like an interesting face. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Yep.
Yeah. So those images, I mean, I love the way that you broke it down, and I think it resonated with me because I too am a fan of faces, if you will. Like I've done quite a few personal projects, and they are portrait related, and they really are about faces. And I like how you decided to go about it by saying, you know what, I'm not going to have some intricate backstory. I just want to capture some faces and then see what happens. And then as you saw, you know, after you did the series and went back and started putting it together, that it all just flowed together in a way that was really all your own. And I think it kind of shows how as creatives and as photographers, we can take people that are in front of our camera, and the things that stand out to us or the things that resonate with us are the things that we tend to, you know, to capture. So it's a portrait of the people that are in front of your camera, but it's also a portrait of you. And that really came through in that project that you did. So that just made me really excited. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Well, thank you. All of that makes me so happy. You have no idea. Like the whole thing, like you saw a picture, it made you stop. It made you look at more. I mean, that has been my driving force for years, is if I can make a photo that has that ability to make somebody stop and take a look. And at first it was more in like photojournalism stuff, and now it's more portraits. Like that's a huge success to me. That's, if it makes me feel a little bit like I just flew just a little bit, then it feels like a success. And the faces thing, so this, so many different things that you said just make me so happy. One, I wish you were a creative director or a photo editor who would hire me all the time. So if you change careers, remember this conversation.
We'll do.
To the faces project in particular. So I lived in LA for a long time, from 1998 to 2014. And I never really, it didn't make sense to me. I didn't make sense in LA, even though I'm from California. I was born a couple hours north of there. So a huge part of like 2014 to, I shot the faces thing in 2019, was getting to New York and then finding an apartment which we could afford that we wanted to live in. Here is ridiculous because we don't have no money. So just normal people.
Yeah.
And then that was like 2 years of my life. And then finding a studio to share, and then figuring out how to pay for the studio share. And like 5 years went by. And I'd always up to that point done personal work. to, I don't know, supplements, feed my soul, whatever, try to advance, try to learn more. And so the faces was the first thing I had kind of done as like a project since we moved here. And I talked to a photo editor about it, who I really wanted to work with, the publication. And I forget the exact words, but it was kind of, the message was, that's a terrible idea because there's no point to it. It didn't make sense in her world to do something like that where there, I didn't have a plan starting out. And I was kind of like, yeah, but it's sort of it's a risk and I'll get interesting people and sort of my choice of them will be what shapes the project. And she was like, no, what you need to be doing is going and photographing like people who run abortion clinics. And I was like, well, very different from what I'm talking about. And you're never going to hire me. Great. Okay. But I have a very creative friend who said to me, and I used to have it on my bulletin board, which is right here. And I realized I took it down. If you know where you're going to end up, why would you even start something? And so those words kind of fortified me through that project, which any number of times, because Craigslist, you know, you get people who are, I got great people ultimately, but it was a lot of shuffling through people who flaked and nutballs.
Of course, it's Craigslist. Yeah.
It's Craigslist, right. And that was sort of part of it too, you know? Anyway, so all of that you said makes me very happy. I'm glad you liked it.
You know, you talked about growing up in California. So let's take it back. Let's go to the origins of Stephanie. And that was in Goleta, California, correct?
Yes, indeed. Yes.
So tell me a bit about how your family even ended up there. What did your parents do?
So my parents are first generation. My mom is Croatian. My dad is Italian. And both of their parents immigrated. My mom's folks came over in like 1920-ish, and my dad's probably a little bit before then. My dad grew up in Hudson, Massachusetts, which is not too far from Boston, and my mom grew up in Oakland. So I'm like peasant stock, you know.
Come on.
And no, I mean, it's, you know, it's the American dream. They were the previous generation. I mean, people used to make fun of Italians the way other races now are being picked on. I mean, you know, and so it goes. So my dad was the ninth child of nine children and Italian. And my mom was the second of two, which is maybe the difference between Croatians and Italians. I'm not really sure. And they met, my mom's dad worked as a porter on trains, I think. And my mom's mom worked at canning factories around the Bay Area. And my mom went to high school, not college. My dad went through college and then joined the Air Force. He was actually going to be a priest for a while. Oh. And this will give you an idea of, and they will never hear this, so I can say this. He was too scrupulous to become a priest. They actually thought he was too, I don't know what you call it, anal retentive maybe, to be a priest because he would be too hard. So that's what I was raised with. And he was an engineer. He joined the Air Force, went to college on the, you know, when you get out of college and they pay for you to go to college, or supposed to. I can't think of the name of it. Anyway, and got his engineering degree. Met my mom at a dance hall in Oakland, I think. He like came down with, it was like, they're very 1950s. They were married in 1957. They're an older generation, children of the Depression, super conservative, Catholic. And my dad studied engineering, got a job at Raytheon, which was defense contractor. And I think it was his first job. They flew him down. I'm sorry, General Motors. And they flew him down to Goleta. And then he moved over to Raytheon and, you know, that's where the job was. So that's where they moved. And it was genius because at that point, Goleta was just a little beach town. And for most of my childhood and growing up, Santa Barbara was not Santa Barbara. It was just a beach town. And so it was a great place to grow up. It was beautiful.
So what did young Stephanie find herself doing? Like, how did you keep yourself busy? And were there creative pursuits at an early age that engaged you?
I loved to read. My mom encouraged me. We would go to the library together. So she was a housewife. Dad worked very, like I said, 1950s. She wrote the checks. He brought home the bacon. And she and I would go to the library and I'd love the smell of books. And I'm very grateful to her for encouraging me in that. And so I liked to do creative writing, just little stories. And I don't even know if I ever finished any of them, but that was very fun. I love to draw. I would make stuff all the time. So there were these toys that I wanted that you'd see in the Sears catalog, which totally dates me. But and I wanted them. And my parents were like, no, you can make something like that. So I used to make Like I made a paper aquarium, which is like paper aquarium, but it was all colored, you know, and I put saran wrap across the front, and that was the window into the aquarium. And so I did a lot of stuff like that. I desperately wanted a horse, and there's no way we could have afforded one. But I kept thinking, I subscribed to Horse and Rider magazine, and I would, every year they did a horse giveaway, and I would clip out the thing and put it in an envelope and stick it in the mail. And I'm not sure that my mom didn't come out after me and take it out of the mail and rip it up and throw it away. But I never did win the horse.
You said you were into creative writing. And honestly, anytime I came across, you know, your posts, or if you had done an interview on another platform and it was in written form, you write in such a way. And even in our email correspondence, you write in such a way that I get a sense of who you are right off the bat. Like the way that we're talking right now. And when you first got on, I'm like, this is exactly what I was expecting. Just you have a very good way of pushing your personality through your writing. So just wanted to say that. But then,
that's great.
No, it is great. It's very useful. You mentioned that you loved horses. And on one hand, I'm like, how does that even work? If some person won this contest, logistically speaking, where's the horse going to be kept? And how do you, you know, that just seems kind of wild. But anyway, I came across an article that said that you started photography by your brother letting you borrow his camera to take a picture of a horse. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
I always wondered, too, where the horses would live if I won one. And I thought backyard, but it was a tract home. You know, it was a small little backyard, so it would have not worked. Still, I used to want one of those. Anyway, so my brother is 6.5 years older than me, and I idolized him when I was a kid. I'd follow him around everywhere. I loved hanging out with him and his friends. And he had a camera, and he was quiet and studious, and that was kind of one of his outlets. And I think there was a time he wanted to be a photographer as well. And so, I don't know, we were with my parents on a Sunday. We would go for drives in our ginormous station wagon with no air conditioning and naga hide seats. And we stopped, and there were horses like in San Ynez Valley in the distance. And this is all kind of, I remember, I may be making it more interesting than it was, but he handed me the camera. I took a picture of the horse, and it was like this big in frame. It was like tiny little picture of horse. But, you know, he got the pictures developed, and I saw it, and I held it, and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. So that was the first picture that I remember taking. My dad had cameras, but it wasn't a huge deal. I also remember the other thing, and I think I've mentioned this once or twice before, but when I was in like fourth grade, you had to do the state reports, you know, so I did Kentucky one year and like Tennessee the next, which is horse. And I used a National Geographic for my information and picture source. And I remember like laying on the carpet in the kitchen area and saying to my mom, I want a job like this where you're outside all the time because it seems so boring to go to another room and work for your lifetime. And my mom was like, those aren't jobs. That's not a job you can have. You can't do that. And so it was sort of, I guess early on, I was thinking outside pictures, horses, camera, but it didn't all gel for a while. It took a while to get together.
How did you go from, okay, I'm interested in being outside and doing these interesting things, but you eventually went to UC Santa Barbara and got your BA in classical archaeology? I guess that archaeology side of the house is kind of like outside and exploring, and that kind of makes sense. But how did that even come about? And were there other things that you considered before you decided to major in that?
Well, I went to a super small high school, same one that my brother went to, Catholic, if that tells you anything.
Oh, yeah.
Again. And here's something else. We were both valedictorian of our classes. Granted, they were very small classes. So I wanted to go to an Ivy League college. That was in my heart of hearts. I wanted to live somewhere with seasons and had history, like old history. California history in Santa Barbara, it's like a couple hundred years old. I mean, I know it goes back before that, but in terms of, I don't know, education, I wanted to go to an institution that had been around for a while. But my folks were not a fan of that plan. And said, it's weird because I have always wanted to see the world, travel, and do anything, pretty much anything that I could. And I wasn't really raised with that in mind. I was raised to stay close to home. And it was a very sort of fearful, the world isn't safe kind of upbringing. So I actually had panic attacks starting in college for I don't know, a decade or more still every now and again, and about leaving home and being far away. But there, I desperately wanted to go far away. So all of this is a long way of saying I didn't go away to college. I stayed in Santa Barbara because that's what the folks supported. And I didn't have the independence at the time to do anything else. So UC Santa Barbara. And I lived at home for the first couple of years, and I didn't declare a major until they were like, dude, you got to declare a major. Because I was like, I don't know. I kind of wanted to be a creative writer, actually. I really wanted to be a creative writing major, but I was afraid. I loved writing in high school. I had this teacher, substitute teacher, Mr. Litton. He was so cute. He was like MacGyver, but because that was the era also, like back when MacGyver was kind of cute. And I had a huge crush on him. And so I would write stories about horses, shocker. And and so I wanted to go to UCSB and I'd be a writer, you know, and I was scared because what I was successful at in school was the logical things. Like, you tell me what you want, you tell me how to solve a problem, I will do it. But if I'm off on my own, it's a little more terrifying. So I didn't declare a major until I had to. And then I did classical archaeology because I wanted to know the origin of things. And at that time in my history and in social history, Greek and Roman was like the origin of civilization. And so that's where I thought I would start. I realize now that's not correct, but yeah, that's what I knew at the time. And I had done languages in college. I did Italian. And so Latin was very similar. And also Harrison Ford and, you know, Indiana Jones. I wanted to be Indiana Jones. And then I saw like a behind the scenes thing of Indiana Jones and the camera guy riding on the thing while Indiana Jones was riding along on his horse. And I was like, I want to be that guy. And yeah, so that's a long answer.
I, first of all, thank you for sharing all of that. And you said a few things that I want to circle back to, but starting off with the last thing that you said, because I know that behind the scenes video that you're talking about. As a kid, I loved those behind the scenes. Matter of fact, there was a show on Discovery Channel called Movie Magic, and they would like, you know, show all of that interesting stuff. So I was like totally a fan of that. But anyway, that going back just a little bit further to what you said, my parents are pretty strict. And there is a bit of fear mentality that made you feel the urge or the pressure to stay home and, you know, be close to them. And that's important because as we now know, like right now you're in New York, so you had to overcome quite a bit of different mindsets to really make it to where you are now. And even that piece that you said about the panic attacks, I don't want to talk about it just yet because we'll go once we get a little bit further into the career, we can kind of delve into that. But I think that's also, I think it's important to touch on that, because I know there's a lot of people that are dealing with that. And even now with the uncertainty of the world and all of this craziness going on, I think that we should be having these type of conversations about mental well-being. And I heard this influencer call it something. They're trying to rebrand mental health by saying mind health, I think, or something like that. Just trying to release some of the stigma around it. And, you know, and that's, I think that's something I definitely want to talk about. But for your parents to have that mentality and for you to eventually step outside of that, that had to have been a huge jump. So for instance, you went ahead and got the BA in classical archaeology. You get that degree and you realize, and I don't know at what point that you realized that you didn't want to, you know, pursue it any further, but I believe I came across an article or something where you were like, you didn't really want to go to grad school and pursue it any further, which I can completely relate to because second semester of my senior year of college, I was a psychology major and I'm like, I have made it this far, but I've decided based off of everything that I'm learning now about what this job really entails, that I am such an empath that I cannot sit and listen to people tell me like this traumatic stuff all day and then me be okay. So I was like, I'm not going to pursue this any further, but I've come this far. So I'm going to go ahead and get this degree and then I'll figure out, you know, what I'm going to do after the fact. So it looks like you came to that point where you're like, okay, I'm not going to take this any further. And you decide to start experimenting with photography, Freudian slip.
Kind of, because there was therapy involved. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So you decide, okay, I'm going to do photography or I am at least going to start experimenting or pursuing it a little bit more. How did your parents receive that? Because I know that had to have been a tough conversation.
Yeah, well, there were a number of tough conversations. So it wasn't like an immediate thing. In college, good grades were not like, oh, I didn't have to study and I aced the test. I studied a lot. I worked really, really hard. And in college, I was once again valedictorian, although they didn't call it that. But I had like a ridiculous number of, I feel like such a dude, no offense when I say this, but I had like 21 A pluses on my report by the end of it. Yeah, transcript. Ridiculous. I should have partied more. I regret that to this day. I wasn't ever really drunk until I was like 35.
Oh, and wow.
I'm not advocating that, but or alcohol use, but Lord knows I should have done more when I was younger because it wouldn't have hurt me as much as it did. Anyway, so school was hard and a lot of work and a lot of anxiety. And I think I was a sophomore when I started having panic attacks, and I would have them around feeling like I hadn't prepared enough for things. Because you put together the conservative Catholic OCD upbringing and a high stress thing like finals, and it's going to be a mess eventually. But that being said, I was good at school. And so I thought, well, I'll just go to grad school and become a teacher, professor, because that's the other way to get to an Ivy League college. I thought was, oh, well, I'll just be a professor at the Ivy League college and I'll ride to school with my sweater with the leather elbow patches and a little bicycle and I'll have books in the front, you know, and that seemed like the alternate option. And then I took a couple jobs. So I officially took a year off, but applied to grad school, got in an art history at UCSB again, and still didn't apply anywhere else because at that point I was also seeing somebody and I had been for a few years and he wasn't going to leave Santa Barbara and I codependent no more. I stayed there also for that reason. But so I took a year off and got a job at a brokerage firm, and I was working in a photo lab, a 1-hour lab doing printing and stuff like that, which was good experience for color and learning from other people's mistakes, and trying to figure it out. Like, what did I want to be? It was such a stressful period. And my studio manager, Monica, she's going to be 29 this year, but we met when it was 5 years ago or so. And she was kind of going through the same, like the 20s are hard. You know, I was stressed the fuck out about how the rest of my life was going to go.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to fuck it up because I felt like my parents were never happy and always a little disappointed. And I so didn't want to be that person. Again, super glad they won't overhear this. So it was a lot. And during the year off, I just thought, oh God, I don't want to go back to that school thing again because it was so miserable. And I still have stress dreams about missing finals, forgetting to study all the time. And they're awful. I did actually. So one of my stress dreams is like, oh, I didn't actually graduate. And like 3 months after I graduated, I got a letter from the college saying, you didn't actually graduate because you missed a class. And I was like, and I went in and like in tears to the people. And I'm like, oh, I'm doing all the class. And so that's the dream that I continue to have. It was fine. They made a mistake, but that was a thing. So I went
it
to-
It sounds like PTSD. I'm sorry.
Oh my God. No, the whole thing. And then that actually happened in real life was so unfair. So I went to a counselor and we just talked about things. And she's like, what do you like to do? And I said, well, I like to take pictures. And she's like, do that for a living. And I was like, I can't do that for a living. That's not a job. That's what everybody says. That's not a job. So the conversation with the parents didn't really happen immediately. I did say I wasn't going to go back to college or to grad school. And I don't know if I had fully elucidated to them that I wanted to be a photographer or not. I think they sort of took a well, we'll see what happens kind of stance where it was like, so they wanted me to make the job at the brokerage firm full time because then I'd have benefits and everything else. And I was working like 30 hours a week or something there and then like 20 hours a week at the photo lab. Instead of that, I started taking, I had a camera in high school. I saved up, bought a 35 millimeter, started shooting some stuff for the yearbook, which was so not popular then. Like it was none of that. We didn't have arts. There was no arts in high school at all. And so I was really kind of on my own doing that. And then in college, I took pictures when I traveled a little bit and for fun. And that was about it. And then I was like, I'm going to be a photographer, but I had no idea how to do that. So I, sorry.
You're good.
So I did what I did in school. I went to the library and I looked at books and I Xerox copied, because that's what you could do then, pictures from like the Cartier-Bresson portrait book, or I got a subscription to National Geographic and I would take notes. I had little tiny notebooks and I would write notes about every story.
Oh, wow.
Oh God, yeah. No, like when they shot during the day, like what time of day they shot, what lens I thought they used, what types of pictures they were doing, all of that. I was just trying to figure it out because I didn't go to that school. And it was sort of during that process that I became more serious about it and was talking to my folks, and I think they didn't approve, but they didn't say no. I guess they couldn't have at that point, but they could have, and I'm grateful for that, but it wasn't until I got a job as a staff photographer that they really got behind the whole idea.
And so how did that come about? And that was with a satellite office of LA Times or something?
You know what? I was listening to one of your other interviews with someone who had gone to an arts high school and then SBA or something, Kareem.
Yep, Kareem Black. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I was listening to that like, fuck, that is so not my experience of this life. And I just have busted my ass for so many years in so many weird directions to try to get. So I was working at Fromex. I was working at Dean Witter, and I was calling. I was shooting stuff. Like, I had to be at work at 7 a.m., so I would get up at sunrise and go in the mountains behind Santa Barbara and take sunrise pictures, which is so like, whatever. But at the time I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And I put together a little portfolio of Santa Barbara pictures with anything I could think of. And I went through the yellow pages and called publishers in Santa Barbara, I can't even imagine the people on the other end of the line were like, what the fuck? And then This Week in Santa Barbara, which was a little tourist magazine, it was like small format, said, sure, come in and bring some pictures. So I brought some pictures and they were like, okay, we'll use one of these on the cover.
Wait, time out though. Let's not gloss over the fact that you even took the initiative to do that. I think it's those small things that really do separate the people who are good and the people who are great. Like you doing, like, where did that even, like, what gave you the inspiration to say, I am going to go and cold call these publications? Where does that come from?
I have no idea. I mean, I'm stubborn and determined, and it's sort of like, you know, if I'm like, oh, I'm going to do it. And that was true of, I guess you could say, oh, it's my passion. And so that's what's made me do it. I mean, I somehow, despite everything, I have this, like, I see photos, I see opportunity, clients that I would like to have still all the time. And I'm like, I could kill it for you. Just give me the shot. And I get knocked down all the time. Oh my God, people say stuff to me when I, you know, reviews or whatever. It's like the woman who said, you know, this is a terrible idea, you shouldn't shoot faces. I have had, I don't know if other people just don't talk about it or if it happens to me more than other people, but I get, so people have said the shittiest things to me where I'll just be like, damn, is that true?
Oh, wow. Okay. So hold on. I want to hover on this for a moment because you make a good point. There aren't enough people talking about the times where they get shot down. And in this day and age of social media, it's all about the highlight reels, you know?
Oh my God. Right.
And I'm guilty of it too. I'm guilty of throwing the highlights out there, but that's what sells. But
right. Well, and see, this is before we started talking, I was like, so do I talk about this stuff? I'm not really sure if I should or not, because that's not what you're supposed to say. You're supposed to say it was super easy and my life is amazing. And no, I have blood and skin falling off trying to get opportunities.
Okay, so you've talked about some of the things that people have said to you, but what is it in you that allows you to press forward through that? Because a lot of people can hear that and be like, well, shoot, I guess I'm just going to go be a barista then. Why did you keep going?
Oh, I think about it all the time. Like when I first thought I'm going to be a photographer, what I thought was, I'm going to try this until someone says no. And someone whose opinion I trust says no, which happened almost immediately. But you know, at the time I was like, well, I don't believe you. And it's still, that is what I think. I turned 50 in December and I wish I were 10 years younger. I wish I were at the point in my career and I were 10 years younger where I'm at now, because then I'd feel like I have a little bit more wiggle room. But I still all the time like, well, okay, so if I give this up, then what could I do? I'm like a toll booth taker. I don't know. We can move to Indiana. And I mean, but for some reason I get knocked down and I'm like, that's it. I can't do it anymore. I mean, I've been to reviews here in New York before I moved here where I'm like walking down the street crying in the Bowery and have no idea where I am. And it takes a day or two and then I suck it up and I'm like, God damn it, they're wrong. So I don't know where that comes from. It's And I don't know how long it lasts, because it's harder now than it was 10 years ago to get back up again. So it's at the same time, I've been doing it longer, so I'm a little bit more used to it, but it doesn't get any easier. And it's still just crushing when things don't go the way I want them to, or when I do a great job for a client. They love what I've done. The first shoot I had when I came to New York was, when we moved, was the cover for American Way magazine, Carson Daly. And we rented a studio at Splashlight, and it was awesome. It felt great. And the pictures were great. And he and I clicked, and this art director loved it. And they even showed it on, is he on The Daily Show? I forget what show, not The Daily Show, the whatever it is that he used to be on. Oh my God, the guy. He's like, this is a great photo of you. And I was like, me, I did that. And then the art director left, and I have not worked for them since.
Oh, man.
And shit like that happens to me, like, you know, fairly often. And I don't know why, but I still am like, okay, all right, cool. I'll try again.
You're just a glutton for pain and punishment, huh?
Well, Catholic. And,
There you go.
Former. You go. I should say former, but yes.
There was something that you had said, and I forget where I pulled this from, but I want to read it to you because I think there are some people out here who need to hear this, and I want to get a little bit more from you on this quote. And you say, as a woman and as an artist, I've struggled for years with self-doubt, validation, and criticism. But since moving here, and I'm assuming that's to New York, I've developed more faith in myself and know that I bring a viewpoint to a shoot. So I guess and we were really just talking about this in regards to how you deal with some of the self-doubt and the criticism. But I do like the fact that you can still, through all of that, know without a shadow of a doubt that you do have a viewpoint, and that does show through in your work time and time again. So how did you develop that viewpoint?
It's taken a while. That's a tough one. So one of the things you said when we first started was that it was clear that I had a point of view, and that delights me because I feel like it's something I lacked for a long time. To address the as a woman part of the question first, because that's something I still struggle with. And I always, I think age honestly has something to do with this, is that as I've been doing things for a while and met more people and just had more experience in the world, met more variety, a greater variety of people, I have started to realize, like, for a long time, I thought if you were older than me, then you were the adult in the room. I mean, everybody does that, I suppose. And so I'm like, okay, I trust you because you're older than me. And then moving here to New York, I've thought that about people, but that I think you're wrong about what you're saying right now. And then found out that in fact they were wrong. And as that's gone, happened more times, and I've caught it. I mean, before, I guess I didn't catch it, or I was just not paying attention, I'm more able to be like, no, you're wrong. That is not going to work. And it happened when I moved here with assistants a lot, because I was trying to find good assistants. And I was like, well, if you're assisting in New York, you must be really good, right? Because you're here. And they were dudes often. And dudes, again, no offense, like to explain things. I went to an eye doctor for 4 or 5 years here, and he would explain photography to me. And I'd be like, you know, I'm a photographer, right? And he'd be like, no, but you know, with street photography, you really have to. And I was just like, okay, all right, I'm just going to listen to this because it doesn't make sense to. And so I've had that experience over the years many, many times. I used to go, not anymore, but I used to go to events with my boyfriend and then my husband, and guys would go up to the guy and be like, hey, so what do you shoot? Be like, yeah, that's because there weren't a lot of me out there doing photography back in the day. So it was really hard for women are socialized, or were, not anymore, I hope, but we're socialized differently to be like collaborative and not as assertive. And especially in my family, which was very traditional 1950s upbringing. And I have no idea why I thought I could ever get away with any of this, because I wasn't raised to be that person. I wasn't raised not to be. They never said, oh, you can't be this. They, in fact, were like, you can do whatever you want as long as you can pay the rent. So I still struggle with that. I still struggle with feeling fully valid and confident, but I'm getting better and better at it. I feel like in the last couple of years, especially. And along with that, I think getting the studio, joining that studio share in 2016 gave me the space to have people come in and just, I really could nail down lighting, because lighting is important to me and it's a big part of how I shoot. And so every time I go in, I would pull references from the European Masters or Avedon or Penn. Like, those are my heroes, the classics. And it's now, these days, is kind of like dated and perhaps perhaps outdated, but I still think that the craftsmanship in those pictures is incredible. And that's what I want. I want to bring some craftsmanship to it. And so that with the studio, I was able to practice. And as I practiced more, then what I liked and what I didn't like became more clear. And then I've maybe gotten better at like throwing out pictures that just weren't, that I felt were ticking boxes for a potential client and not ticking the box for me. And I do that still all the time. Like my website is probably, I just winnowed it. It probably still has way too many pictures on it. Cause I'm like, yeah, but I can do this. You should hire me. Look, see, I did that. You should hire me.
I want to touch on that very briefly because I think that was something that I learned a lot later on that was that's like of the utmost importance, which is editing your work down to really. And you know, maybe that is also why. And you say you think you still have too many photos, but I think the photos that you have selected to go on your site are also informing everybody else on your point of view. So for those who are listening who don't really understand the importance of, don't just throw everything on there, like look through it, choose the images that you feel represent whatever story you were trying to tell or whatever point that you were trying to get across, and toss the rest of them, man. Like even if it's only one or two photos, stick to those. And you know, like I said, let the rest slide. Because
don't you feel not to interrupt, but don't you feel it's hard? Because I don't have another option as far as income. Like I didn't marry for money, damn it. And and I've said it in front of him before. He knows. I mean, you know, he's a creative person too. So there's no like, there's no wiggle room here. I need to pay the bills. So and always have. It's always been that way. So I've always been. And I've found this to be true, creative directors or art directors or whatever, unless they see the exact thing that they're looking for on your website, there are a few, or at least I've met some that are amazing. And they're like, if you can do this, I know you can knock it out of the park. But I still struggle with that. How do I narrow it to Instagram? I don't know how to curate that very well. That's a whole thing. Like if that's my portfolio now, I don't know whether I should put stuff that's run in a magazine or the stuff that I wish had run in the magazine, because it's hard to know. And it changes, that the target is moving all the time and tastes are changing and fads and, you know, it's really hard.
All of that, everything that you said, I think that's on everybody's mind or in our industry all the time. And that is the question. What do we put out there? What is going to be the most relevant and what's going to get us the most work? And ultimately that should be I think a lot of people also get caught up on, well, what will everybody else like? And we also have to do that balance of what will they like and what will they pay me to shoot? So no, I'm totally there with you. And of course, all of this stuff is easier said than done. Like, you know, like even when I say edit it down, I struggle with that, but I've gotten better. I will say that, you know, and progress is always a good thing. And when I'm looking at your feed on Instagram, I think it works. Like, I don't know what you decided to do in regards to the question that you're asking yourself of, do I run the images that were printed or the ones that I wish were printed? And honestly, when you said that, the ones that I wish were printed, something in the way that you said it, it's almost like you already knew the answer to that question. You know what I'm saying? Like I you know the answer to that question. And I am of the opinion that what we put out, you know, we'll get more of the same. So maybe you experiment a little bit more with just putting out the stuff that that you wish had gotten printed. But honestly, as I look at your Instagram feed, I think it's perfect. I think with the color and the energy, I mean, honestly, that's why we're having this conversation. Like, had I not enjoyed it, I wouldn't have even thought to reach out to you. So,
well, that's awesome. Cause I total have compare and despair and FOMO and all that stuff. Yeah. I look at other people's and like, they've got tens of thousands of followers. I'm like, shit, I don't know.
And that's a whole other job too. Like just even like you have to be intentional about building the following and then sustaining. And it's just, there's so much that we got to do, man. It's so much. And it's, you know, it's just getting worse.
Right. And it's changed a lot. I mean, I remember going from film to digital and that was a huge thing. And it just, the responsibility now we have to do. Yeah. I don't know. It is interesting and challenging. I just wish I didn't have to be challenged so much.
Well, you know, the pressure makes diamonds, and you continue.
Oh, good
to,
one.
Yeah. And you continue to make diamonds, and you just like you said, you made that transition from film to digital. And I know that there were the naysayers at that time, and the people were like, "Oh, this is not art, or this is ridiculous. This is, you know, deadening the or lessening the importance of photography." But clearly, that wasn't the case. I mean, if anything, it just got more people, you know, interested in it, which is now kind of the issue. But at the same time,
thanks, internet.
But at the same time, it's still creating opportunities for us. It's like we have to kind of be like water and flow, as Bruce Lee would say. But I feel like you're doing that. And again, this is just me on the outside looking in. And at the end of the day, we all have our own thoughts to battle with. But when I look at the work, I'm like, man, Stephanie's got it going on. And I'm not just saying that to gas you up. Like take it and keep it, put it under the pillow. I don't know. But yeah, no, it's solid, man. And I want to acknowledge you for that. And I've got a couple more questions. I know it's already an hour in, but I just want to ask you a few more questions and then I'll let you get with the rest of your day. Oh, how did you end up in New York?
My brother, who I adored. And I came to New York in 1989. I had graduated from high school, and we came here for, I don't know, a long weekend and stayed at the Hotel Wellington near Times Square. And the smell, oh my God, New York City, it was August and it was the city and it was gross. And
this was a different New York City, right?
It was a different New York City, but I'd always wanted to go because New York is like where it's at. Like it was the Ghostbusters, for Christ's sake. I mean, that was one of my favorite movies ever. It still is. It was in New York City. I wanted to see that stuff. We went past Tavern on the Green. I was like, ah, that's where the dude got chased in the monster. And it was sort of the center of the world to me, and so different from where I was from. So that was at the graduated high school, and then moved to LA. Well, so this week in Santa Barbara, when I started contributing to them for photo credit, it was the little bitty magazine, and built a little portfolio. And then that little portfolio I took to the weekly, which was sort of like the LA Weekly or the Village Voice, and in Santa Barbara Independent, which is still around to their credit, and got an internship there, still no money, and did that while I was working at Dean Witter and the photo lab and also someplace else. And that built up a little portfolio. And then I went in to meet with the photo editor at the Santa Barbara News Press, which is the daily there. And that guy, Bob, whose last name I will not say, so he's anonymous, is probably not around anymore. He was like, oh, yeah, you're not going to be a photographer. I was like, oh,
wow.
Shit. Yeah. Oh, God. So, like I said, so many people have said that to me. Pat at Dean Witter, when I quit to pursue more photography freelance stuff, he was like, what are you doing? And I told him, he's like, yeah, it's never going to happen. And when I turned down the fellowship at UCSB I got a little stipend they offered me for the art history graduate degree. And Dr. Del Chiaro called me up. I used to wear these crazy Missoni sweaters. And he's like, oh, there was a mistake. It should have been, you know, $2,000 total instead of $1,000 for your thing. And I was like, oh, wow, thanks. But I've decided I want to be a photographer. And he's like, what? I said, I decided I want to be a photographer. He fucking hung up on like click phone. So eventually, Bob left the Santa Barbara News Press and was replaced by Len Wood, God bless him. And he would give me photo assignments doing like high school sports and social stuff and that, some other stuff that I did, enterprise stories. And then they published that little essays, led to a different portfolio, which eventually got me. And I was still working part-time all over the place. And then eventually that portfolio got me an interview for the satellite paper of the LA Times. And I moved to LA. So I did that for 3 years and wasn't super happy and was still thinking National Geographic-y kind of wishful thinking and journalism and photojournalism. And then I just sort of, I don't know, shifted a little bit and decided I want to try freelance. Went freelance in 2000, I think it was 2000, and did whatever. Didn't matter. Whatever you needed a photographer, I would do whatever. And I sent out CDs, remember CD portfolios, to newspapers around the country and started getting work for like the Dallas Morning News. And the New York Times actually was one of my first freelance clients back before it was super cool to shoot for the New York Times. I would go to portfolio reviews in New York. So, and then, okay, to back up, once a year or so at that point, I would come here to New York with a portfolio for a week, panic attack up the yin yang, but make phone calls and see people at Time, Newsweek, US News, People Magazine, all of those places, and the New York Times. I would go in every time and see 5 or 10 editors because they were really good about, oh, we should see so-and-so over and yada, yada. So I'd come to New York a lot, and that's where the work was coming from or what I wanted to be. But I was still seeing the same dude in Santa Barbara, and I didn't have the cojones to move across the country on my own because of, I was struggling for years. And really until we moved here and I started traveling more with panic attacks around traveling, and which made pursuing photojournalism pretty much impossible as like a real thing, which may be why I ended up doing more portraiture. But so New York was the dream, and I didn't know if I would ever have the mental and emotional strength to do it. And then I'll tell you why I did, because I used to color my hair with nature tint or whatever from Whole Foods. And I was like, I don't want to be one of the ladies who's like 80 and has jet black hair. And you know, it's not true. So at a certain point, I stopped coloring it and there was a lot of gray. And I said to my husband, so in the meantime, I had stopped seeing one guy, met my husband. He started going to film school. That was in 2001. He graduated in 2004. And I was like, great, now we can move. And then he got cancer, and he's fine, but he got cancer. Sure. And that became a thing. And so then 10 years went by and I stopped coloring my hair. It was really gray. And I was like, fuck, we got to do this. If we're going to do this, I don't want to die not having tried. So and luckily Tim was game. And also incredibly luckily, his job at the time had an office in New York and they let him move. So he went into work one day. He's like, I'm going to tell him today. And I was like, great. So the whole day I was like, and then he texted me. He's like, they're going to let me move offices. I was like, oh shit, thank God, because I would be basically starting over again.
Yeah.
And so we did it, and it was ridiculous, but great. It was totally the right move. I wish I'd done it sooner. It was hard as fuck, pardon my French, but it, you know, we'd saved, I did a bunch of TV production stills work for some shows, and that allowed me to kind of save up for the move.
Yeah. I saw that on your IMDb.
Yeah. Oh, is it? Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've worked for a bunch of, I've done a lot of that stuff. And we drove across the country with two cats and a dog in the car and lived in a basement studio apartment for a year together in one room. And looked at a lot of really shitty apartments that we still couldn't afford because we were so naive coming from LA to here, because LA was sort of cheap still. And I was like, oh, we can find something for, $2,000 that we can. No.
That's funny to hear you say that LA was cheap.
It was. Well, and I had been, okay, so here's how much I love change. I was in the same apartment for 16 years in LA. Was it 16? Yeah. No, I mean, in the same building, I did move from a studio next door to a one bedroom, which was a huge upgrade because I had a hallway then. That was really exciting. But I was in that apartment for the whole time because it was, and at a certain point, it gets to the point where it's cheap compared to new apartments. So then you're like screwed a little bit because you can't move unless you shell out a bunch of money. Which also allowed us to save money. Yeah. So LA was cheap. We had our one bedroom barely reached 1,000 in 2014. It was cheap.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was in the Miracle Mile. Now, I think as soon as we moved out, it went up to like 1,800 a month.
Oh, yeah. They were excited when you guys said, yeah, we're done. Okay. And so then you moved to New York, you and your husband and your dogs and your cat, or dog and cat, or dogs and cats.
Two cats and a dog. Yeah.
Two cats and a dog. You are in a basement apartment for a year, and then you end up finding a space. And so you said that it was hard to start finding and getting work. I guess, what were some of the gigs that kind of got your foot in the door to where you could start working consistently and even work with some of the clients that you have now? I mean, it looks like you have a pretty cool client list. So how did you even build to that after moving to New York?
Well, I was kind of fortunate. I was very fortunate. So for a long time, I was a contributor to Getty, and they were, because I heard your thing with Maren talking about reps. So they weren't really repping me. I was kind of like, in the end, I felt more like a Starbucks chain where they expected me to serve the same coffee as everybody else. And that's what their clients were coming to them for. And I was happy to be selling something and earning some money off the coffee, but it wasn't really my brand of coffee. I'm more of a single origin kind of girl.
I like the parallel.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm a total snob about coffee, by the way. So, so I didn't want to be Starbucks anymore. So I left that relationship. But at the time I moved here, I was still doing work for them. I had really good relationships with them. I had great relationships and still do with Scripps and Discovery Networks. And so there were some TV shows, the Property Brothers were doing here in this area in Westchester and Connecticut. And I was hired to do production stills for those. And I think that was 2015. And that really helped bridge the gap a little bit. And then I was doing things for, I mean, I'm always trying, and I'm not as good at this as I want to be, but I try to reach out to new, I see something and I'm like, that's cool. Who shot it? Or not who shot it, but where, who's the photo editor? If they did that, maybe they'd be interested in me. So I'm, I have a constant like fishing mentality, and I reached out to people. I mean, I just tried emailing a shit ton of people, and so,
similar to like what you used to do when you were, you know, cold calling those publications as a child.
And I've gotten so, I hate making phone calls. Oh God, I hate making phone calls.
You and everybody else in the 21st century.
I know. It's awful. I was for a long time, I made fun of my assistants if they would text me. Like, I was, why didn't you just call me? It'd be so much easier. Now I will not pick up the phone unless it's to call my parents. Yeah. So email. And I did stuff for Travelzoo. I shot restaurant deals for Travelzoo, and the money was not great, but it was something. And that's, there's just a lot of scrambling and doing whatever and trying to build on Backstage magazine. Actually, I had shot for in LA and they hired me here as well. In fact, right around the time I moved, they got rid of most of their office in LA and made it a New York based sort of, which worked well for me. And I still shoot for them. They're fantastic. They're super fun. That's where a lot of the celebrities come from. And then I started doing some work with young talent from different PR firms because I have a studio. I like to use it. I'd rather be shooting than not. So if I can help someone out who's young and starting out and I can shoot them on spec and maybe it'll be good for all of us, I still do that kind of stuff. And it's fun. And it's exciting and invigorating and it helps keep the fire burning.
Now, and we all need that fire to stay burning, especially in those times where we, you know, like even during COVID, I remember when, you know, it first hit back in March when they shut everything down. Can't believe that was a year ago, but it feels like 10 years ago at the same time. They shut everything down and I lost all my clients and, you know, I'm sitting at the house and I'm like, well, you know, what is life right now? Like, what are we doing? And so, you know, I think for the first 2 months, I think I was just like everybody else where it was just like depression. If depression is on a scale from 1 to 10, I was probably like at 5, 5.5. But after that second month, I was like, you know, I got to do something to keep these creative juices flowing. So, you know, I started off with doing like self portraits, but then I'm like, I'm not a good muse. So I'm like, this isn't going to work. And so I started playing around with other ideas and eventually it came to me. I'm like, you know, Kelvin, you love podcasts. And you've always said you wanted to start one. And then I started thinking about like, okay, if I were to have a show, what would I talk about? Or what would the subject matter be? And, you know, clearly here we are talking about photography and I like, you know, talking to photographers and hearing their stories. And that kind of just kept me going. Like I didn't launch this until February, but I started recording. I think I started recording in September of last year. Yeah, it was September. But even before that, I was scared to, you know, actually take the leap and actually start recording and reaching out because then there's this whole thing of I got to.
Then there's pressure.
Yeah, there's pressure. And then, you know, these people don't know who I am. And, you know, I had to do that whole song and dance. And I think I said all that to say that as creatives, we do need that thing that's going to keep us moving, whether it's self assignments or paid assignments. And I feel like when we stop doing that, we die a little bit inside. And that's what was happening. So for anybody just listening, don't get stagnant. Just, you know, keep plugging along. Find ways to do work. I'm telling you, it will work wonders for yourself, your career, and your well-being. But anyway.
Good plug. It's true. I mean, if one way doesn't work, then be like the water and divert a little bit. And water wears down the mountain. It's so true. And you know what? I right before last year was set to be a good year. I was just starting. I wanted to do a series of portraits, and I still do, of people who've been doing what they've been doing for like decades. And I'm super inspired by that. And it gives me a little bit of hope for myself. And it's encouraging. Like Roper, the motorcycle.
Oh, man, I'm glad you brought him up. Yeah, but go ahead. Yeah. I want to talk about
him. He's awesome. And he's like the Bill Cunningham of vintage motorcycle racing. So I started working through Roper people because he knows people in different walks of life and photographed the tugboat guy and also a machinist. And then I had other people lined up and then Monica, my studio manager, and I, we were going to go teach a workshop in Greece. And like last year was going to be amazing. Yeah. Wow. And then right in the wall, COVID. And then it suddenly became like my stress dreams became reality in like overnight. And it was crazy and terrifying and depressing. And yeah. So good for you for coming up with something. Because I don't feel like I came up with a good, I didn't pivot. I don't feel like I was like, oh, I'm going to do this instead because I have all this time. I thought at the beginning, oh, I'm going to do so much reading. I have piles of books that I want to read about photography, about life, you know, literature, whatever. No, I don't know.
Let me touch on that for a second, because I remember as all of this was happening, there was like plenty of memes that touched on this whole idea of certain people were like, oh, well, If you don't come up out of this pandemic with a new side hustle or a new gig or whatever, then you weren't driven. And then the other camp is like, come on, people, this is a pandemic. This is unlike anything that any of us have ever experienced. So let's give ourselves a little grace here. And I feel like for me, the only reason why I was able to pivot and I'm still working through things, and you know, I'm out working and taking gigs sparingly now because I'm, you know, COVID is still real out here in these streets, but you know, I'm getting work and I'm being careful about it. But the only reason why I even did this is because I in my spirit, I just had to. There was no matter how down I got, I knew that in order for me to press on, like I had to have something. So this was kind of like a lifeline, if you will. But there's other people, they're going to operate differently. And some people have been like, well, I haven't done anything. And I'm like, no, you've survived. And that's fine. You know what I'm saying?
There is a lot of, don't you feel like there are a lot of people talking about their pandemic project? I think it was American Photo, their contest this last year for 2021, or the one you're supposed to submit to, that this year I was just like, I have nothing. It was like, somehow it was very explicit that it had to be about all the stuff that happened last year. And we got COVID. My husband and I both got it on March 14th. We know where we got it, and right at the beginning. And so then there was that, like that took, you know, a month. And then there was, oh my God, I'm not working anymore. I need to figure out the unemployment thing, which was such a nightmare as a freelancer. But I'm so grateful that we qualified for this period of time, because it was a huge help, but it was a full-time job setting that up. And then it was like PPP loan. Oh God, I got to apply to that. So I had to find that.
Got that too. Yeah.
Right. And then the Black Lives Matter movement here and everywhere started blowing up. So I started, and because I had COVID, I was like, but I didn't have a positive test. I just had the antibodies. But so I tried to donate plasma and stuff, but they wouldn't take it. And so I was like, all right, fuck, I'm going to volunteer. So I started volunteering at some food pantries and stuff and doing the protesty things. And then I didn't shoot anything. I didn't feel like my story or I was the right person to shoot the Black Lives Matter. I mean, that, you know, there have been lots of white photographers running around shooting that stuff, and mostly old white guys. And I'm kind of like, why are you telling the story? So I didn't feel right about being that person either. And maybe that was the wrong call. I don't know. But that was what my gut said, you know, it was like, stand back and let other people who should be heard do this. The year went by, nothing, you know, I'm still just trying to pay the rent. I didn't make an amazing project. So I think it's great that you were in touch enough with your own creative spirit to do something and do something great.
Thank you. So last question, and I could talk to you for another 45 minutes to an hour. So I'm not going to do that. But not the last question. I want to go back for a second because you touched on David Roper. And I'm curious, did you ever ride motorcycles?
No, but so I met Dave in LA, well, in California through a friend of the original boyfriend, and they all went to college together. And I met Dave through Mary, and she and he came over to our house for dinner one time, my husband, in my apartment. And he just seemed like a cool dude. And once we moved here, I was like, oh shit, we should go see Dave because he's works in Dumbo and, you know, lives in Long Island. And so Tim and I went out and saw the workshop that he works in, and it was incredible. And I just kept thinking, oh, I should really shoot this. And it was kind of like you and the podcast idea where you didn't start doing it for a while. I didn't approach him for a long time. And then finally I emailed, was like, do some video. And so we did. And motorcycles, I've known people who've been killed on them, and they totally intimidate me, but I drive a stick shift car, and I wanted to understand. So after the Roper video that I did, I was just like, God damn it. I really want to understand how you do the thing with the thing and then the feet, because it should be like a stick, but I don't understand. So yeah. Dave, in fall a year ago, not in 2019, we went out to like a Sears parking lot on Long Island, and he showed me how to ride this Japanese motorcycle. I think it was a 350, if that number means anything.
That's a good starter bike. Yeah, yeah.
Turns out I couldn't hold it up because I went too slow to start, and I kind of went, But I did get it. I got it. And I got up to like fourth gear. I was super proud of myself. And I thought, this is amazing and fun. And I could totally kill myself. So I probably shouldn't do this. But I would love that.
Well, you know, I brought it up because you shot that video in a way that made me think that you were a rider. I felt like the shots that you got, I'm like, dang, like this is what's up. So just a little bit of background. I've started riding back in like 2008, but I never got a bike back then. Money wasn't right, but I ended up getting, you know, the license, but I never got a bike. So my skills kind of waned or whatnot. But, you know, with this shared economy, now they have these sites that are almost like Airbnb, but for motorcycles. And one of them is called Rider Share, and another one is called Twisted Road. And I'm going to throw some links up in the show notes because I get some kickbacks if they go on my link. But anyway, what it allows you to do is, like, when I travel, matter of fact, was that last year in February before they shut down the world, I was in LA working some gigs out there. And anytime I go to LA, I like to get a bike and just ride up the Pacific Coast Highway through Malibu and all that, just because it's so gorgeous out there. And to be on two wheels, something that Dave Roper, or Roper as you call him, had said was, when you're doing something and you're risking your life, those are the times where you feel most alive. And one thing that kind of got me through this pandemic was those memories of me going through the canyons in Malibu and riding up the coast and seeing the beautiful Pacific. And yeah, anyway, I'm fanning out on motorcycles right now.
So let's take another second, if you have the second for a quick detour. Have you been to Big Sur?
Not yet. I want to, but I haven't been there yet.
It is the only thing I miss about California is Big Sur. It was a place that my family and I would go when I was a kid. And I didn't love it as much then as I did when I was older. And it's just like, it feeds my soul being there. And I really miss it. I haven't been back since 2013, I think was the last time. Oh, God. And what a great place to be to ride a motorcycle, I would think. Totally dangerous. Huge cliffs. Life-threatening.
Yeah, so that means more fun. More fun. Twisties, man, you know, getting in there. And
See, Roper encourages me, and I, a little bit, and my husband's like, he just wants you to have a motorcycle. I'm like, I kind of want to have a motorcycle too, but it would be such a terrible idea for me.
I don't know. Your vibe is such that I could totally see you on a bike. Like, I could totally see you.
It'd be like a Triumph, though. I would want, you know, like an Indian. Yeah. And, which is all like, is that not just like that hipster artisanal package that you just want to punch in the face?
No, but you know, those Indian, the Scouts, like even the Indian Scouts are such a, it's a nice little small bike, but it's got a little power to it. And I could totally, even the Triumphs. Yes. Yes. I could see that. I could see
that. That would be fun.
So yeah, anyway, the way you shot that, amazing. I felt like you were somebody who were a rider, or at least appreciated the art of riding. And there was one shot in particular. It was a static shot, but you were set up on the track in such a way that when the bikes flew past, it was just like a flicker. And you did it a couple of times in the video. And I'm like, man, that right there, that's what I don't know. It touched me in such a way that I felt like I wanted to bring it up to you. So the whole video was dope, but something about that just really stuck with me, man.
So that, I have to give credit where credit is due. That was an editor decision, because we shot, yes, static with the bikes zipping past, but I think she sped it up a little bit. Yeah, the editor, so Monica Volpacchio is my studio manager. Her sister, Valerie Volpacchio, it's Italian, did the editing, and she's a genius and she did a great job. And it's, I do not edit. I don't want to. I have opinions about sequencing and how things should go. And I had a lot of notes, but I do not want to. It's like accounting. It's not my thing. And she did a great job.
No, that's key. You just touched on something else that is very, I think a lot of people miss, especially being creatives. You know, we get so caught up in the art and feeling like we got to do everything ourselves that we forget to delegate, or don't realize that delegating is actually a thing that's going to help us be even more creative. So yeah, delegate, people. Delegate or die. That's what they'd say. But yes, so I feel like we have covered quite a bit. We've been around the world. We've talked about the highs and the lows. And at the end of the day, we are still here. We're still kicking along and making this thing work any way that we can. And I haven't a doubt that once, you know, and it seems like we're already starting to do it to get back to some semblance of normalcy, I can totally see you getting back in that saddle and making some major things happen. And I hope to see you even do more directing work, because just based off of that video, like, I would love to see you do or love to see what you do with more directing as well. So do you have plans for that?
I would love to. I really, I think you need to change careers and then just hire me for stuff. But beyond that, yes, I would love, in fact, in my stack of books that I meant to read this last year, I have got like half a dozen about directing because I very definitely don't want to be a DP. I have strong opinions about how things should be shot and when, and how the lighting should be, but I don't want to do the work part of, not that I don't want to do the work. You know what I'm saying? That's like a whole other language that I don't know. And like learning an alphabet for Greek, and I chose Latin instead so I could stick with my alphabet, I think that I can direct better than I could DP, because I can direct people fairly well and have, I like to tell stories. It's fun. I would love to learn more about it. I'm intimidated by what I don't know, but I'm trying to figure that out so that at least I can walk in and be like, dudes, I don't know about this thing, but you do. So you need to tell me what works here, and I'll tell you if that works for me. So yeah, that would be really fun. And I know a lot of photographers put photographer/director. I haven't really done that yet, because this is the female me, I think, saying, but I don't have the experience. Whereas a dude would just be like, yeah, I'm a director. Or, you know, not just
you're a director.
Specifically a dude in LA. There was just the LA people, I'm sorry, LA listeners, but there, I did not make sense there, and I didn't understand the people there. So, and that's a lot of entertainment world stuff. So it's, since coming to New York, I feel a little more authentic, and I can maybe authentically do things like that, like direct and shoot more commercial stuff. Just moved in, tiny little plug, just moved into a new studio, Fifth Avenue and West 20th Street. It's 1,000 square feet. Daylight studio, 10th floor, north facing windows.
What?
And it's pretty freaking baller. And I'm super excited about it. And I'm really excited about the work that I can hopefully create in it going forward.
That is awesome. And I saw that you were doing, or you're getting into doing more behind the scenes drawing, where you...
Yes. Diagramming. I've been doing a little very, what would you call it? Off the cuff sort of stop motion animations, yeah, of lighting diagrams with kazoo music. Did you hear the artisanal kazoo music that goes with them? You have to turn the volume on.
See, you know, we don't watch volume now.
I know, but that's what I said. I stayed in the thing. I'm like, volume on for maximum entertainment. And it's really dumb kazoo music. Monica is also a musician, and she is at some point going, there's going to be like pineapple shakers, maybe.
Oh,
and
wow.
music. And we're going to do a little video to promote the studio that will also have probably kazoo and pineapple shakers in the music.
That is what's up. But no, I think those are great. And I feel like that is even another way to, you know, get creative and share, because you're clearly, I'm going to say this and I'm done, I promise. But you talked about it before, but your lighting and the way that you go about building an image, it's all intentional. And I think that a lot of people don't realize that, yo, no, we're not just throwing some stuff up. There's been thought that's going into this, and that is quite evident in your work. And I think it's amazing that you're sharing your techniques behind that. And I think a lot of people would find value in that. So you could probably, you know, grow by a few thousand. You get enough of those videos out, you know?
Well, yeah, the plan is every 2 weeks to release a new one. It was going to be every week, but really, who has the time? And then I also have just recently decided, because someone said, hey, are these going to live anywhere? And I thought, you know, I should just put an education page on my website with these. And actually, I was going to link to you. And then like maybe a list of books that I've read that have been helpful, or anthologies of artists' work or websites or whatever.
Yeah.
To show where if anybody's interested, they can see what I look at before I start shooting, or when I'm trying to figure out what the hell to do next.
I love it. But no, thank you, Stephanie. I appreciate your time and your knowledge and the experiences and your realness, because again, it's not all buttercups and roses out here in real life, you know, but we make it though. We make it work.
One day at a time.
One day at a time.
That's all I can do. Yeah. And this last year has been all about one day at a time. So good lesson.
All right. That was the show. I hope that you enjoyed my conversation with Stephanie. I feel like she had a lot of very interesting things to share, and a perspective that is all her own through the highs and the lows. And I'm always a fan of hearing those type of stories, because, man, life is a challenge sometimes. And it's good to know that there are other people who are going through the same things that you are. So keep doing the things that you're out here doing to better yourself, and keep being creative, because again, it is a great way to just fortify your creativity and strengthen your peace of mind. And as always, if you enjoyed the show, share it with a friend, like and subscribe. Check us out on Instagram and Facebook. Follow us there at What Makes You Click. And again, I just appreciate you for continuing to listen. We'll catch you on the next episode.